Today on Against the Grain, the Bay of Pigs, numerous assassination attempts, a decades-long embargo. The U.S. has done everything possible to take down Cuba's Fidel Castro, and Fidel always has had the last laugh. This enormously influential leader, the third world David to the U.S. Goliath, is profiled in an award-winning documentary by Estella Bravo. I'm C.S. Song will present audio excerpts of the film Fidel. He's one of the monumental, iconic figures of the 20th century. Fidel Castro led the first successful socialist revolution in Latin America, overthrowing the Cuban dictatorship of U.S. ally Fulgencio Batista in 1959 and establishing a profoundly different social order on the Caribbean island. But who is Fidel Castro really? Filmmaker Estella Bravo was commissioned by Britain's Channel 4 to answer that question, and with unprecedented access to Castro, she's put together a fascinating history of the life and times of the Cuban leader. Estella Bravo has been called one of the world's foremost documentary filmmakers by the London National Film Theatre. We are really pleased to be able to present audio excerpts of her award-winning documentary today. It's called simply Fidel. We start with Cuba in and around 1952 when Fulgencio Batista took power.
After the Batista coup, all political parties and constitutional rights were suspended. The university was shut down, but the students continued protesting. Fidel began organizing a clandestine opposition group. On the 26th of July, 1953, Fidel led an attack on the Moncada garrison in Santiago de Cuba. This marked the beginning of the armed struggle against Batista. The operation had hardly begun when a group of Fidel's followers was surprised by a military patrol. Two of the 150 participants were women, Aide Santa Maria and Melba Hernandez. 61 were killed, only 6 in combat. The rest were tortured and murdered after their arrest. Both women survived. Fidel survived thanks to a caring black officer. Then began what would become the most famous trial in Cuban history. Fidel and 29 of his comrades were imprisoned on the Isle of Pines. Fidel for 15 years. He defiantly named his political movement after the date of the Moncada attack, the 26th of July, and smuggled out a manifesto based on his trial defense, entitled History Will Absolve Me. It would become the inspiration for the revolution. Fidel and his companions were freed after 2 years. Batista, giving in to popular protest, declared a general amnesty for political prisoners. 6 weeks after their release, Fidel left for Mexico, and there, with a group of followers, they planned a new attempt to overthrow the dictator. Looking for support, Fidel toured Cuban communities in the United States, in New York, New Jersey, and Florida. Many sympathizers, both rich and poor, contributed to his cause. By the following year, 1956, Fidel had assembled the nucleus of a guerrilla force and felt ready to return to Cuba. A young Argentine doctor, Ernesto Che Guevara, joined them. After the legendary 12-hour meeting, Che's life became an important part of the Cuban Revolution. 82 people, including Che, set out from Mexico on the cabin cruiser Granma. An uprising in Santiago de Cuba was planned to coincide with their arrival. The synchronization of the uprising and landing failed. The Batista military successfully put down the revolt in the city. The Granma arrived 2 days later than expected, and the group landed in a mangrove swamp. The 82 men scattered, but were soon discovered by Batista's forces. Fidel and a few others escaped and refused to admit defeat. Of the original 82, only 21 managed to regroup in the Sierra Maestra Mountains. This is where the guerrilla war began, and the initial group was able to survive and grow. Che Guevara was the group's doctor. Much of their support came from the farmers in the Sierra Maestra Mountains. Some of them joined the guerrillas and became commanders. Both men and women soon joined Fidel's guerrilla movement. And despite traditional male prejudice, a women's battalion was formed.
One of the most important people in his life was a woman called Celia Sanchez. She was the daughter of a rural physician. Her father had provided free health care to many of the poor, impoverished rural people in the area, and she was very much attracted to Fidel's revolutionary movement.
Celia Sanchez remained at Fidel's side for 20 years and held important government posts until her death in 1980. Fidel and his commanders built up their 26th of July movement guerrilla army from a wide range of political allegiances. Batista's forces were trained by the United States, which also armed them with tanks, artillery, and aircraft. They threw all that force against the guerrillas in a war that lasted 2 years.
26th of July had a strong underground movement in the cities. There were sabotage efforts against the Batista government and demonstrations and so forth. The Batista government reacted very strongly. Bodies were left by the side of the road. Students, young people who were suspected of being rebel sympathizers were shot, or in some cases jailed and tortured. As a result of all that, public opinion turned massively against Batista.
An estimated 20,000 people were murdered by government forces during the Batista dictatorship. The rebels put out leaflets and a newspaper, and by 1958 also had a radio station keeping the people informed about developments. Fidel's interviews with foreign journalists ended rumors that he had been killed. Aware of the importance of the media, he made sure he was accessible to the press, even in English.
Our political philosophy is representative democracy and social justice in a well-planned economy.
Muchas de las cosas que hicimos están por encima de lo que nos imaginábamos en aquella época. Y algunas cosas de las ocurridas han sido más difíciles también y más duras de las que nos imaginábamos en aquella época.
In January 1959, Fidel made a triumphal entry in Havana. It had taken 25 months to defeat Batista. With victory achieved, Fidel sought to make Cuba a united and independent nation.
I'll never forget that first speech that he gave a few days after he had entered Havana. I was watching on television, but they released a flight of doves, a symbol of peace, but one of the doves fluttered up into the air and landed on his shoulder. There was a gasp because the pigeon was the messenger of Oshun sent to indicate the anointed one.
Este es un pueblo que en los años aquellos era muy creyente. El otro era más de sincretismo, ¿no? Más de las cosas africanas, las palomas, el pato. Ya a partir de allí, la gente pensaba que Fidel era el enviado de Cristo aquí, ¿viste?
Just 30 days ago, Fidel Castro entered Havana to be greeted by cheering mobs as one of the greatest heroes in Cuba's history. A week before that, General Batista and his top aides had fled the country, leaving it to Castro, his rebel army, and their supporters. Good evening, Fidel Castro. You must have had a very busy week. How do you feel?
Well, I feel well, something tired.
I'm told that you saw your mother for the first time in 4 years this Christmas Eve. That must have been quite a reunion. What did she have to say to you?
She began to cry at the beginning, and at the end, several minutes, she could not tell any word to me.
The first people who left, in the first days after the revolution, by and large were Batista supporters and members of the Batista government. Batista fled the island New Year's Eve of 1959, and many of his supporters followed immediately thereafter.
Those accused of murder and torture who didn't flee the country were brought to trial. The trials, however, were criticized in the U.S. media.
I was following on television the revolutionary trials that began right away, which were the beginnings of the problems with the United States. In fact, a lot of the CIA's people, or some of them at least, were on trial for having been murderers and torturers of Batista.
The same year he came to power, Fidel was invited to visit countries throughout Latin America. He made passionate speeches, calling for unity among the peoples of that region. He proposed the creation of a Latin American market. Also in 1959, he embarked on a tour of the United States, hoping to promote a better understanding of the Cuban Revolution.
Did you ask for any economic
assistance? Not. Here you in the United States are accustomed to see government coming for money? Not. I came for good relations, for good understanding, for good economical relations. We are now poor country, but in a rich, poor people, but in a rich country. What we want is to work in our rich country.
Vice President Nixon was sent to meet the new Cuban leader after President Eisenhower refused to see him. Nixon later wrote a memo describing Fidel as a communist who should be overthrown.
Cuba is an obsession with American leaders, and it really doesn't matter whether they're Democrats or Republicans. It's almost a psychosis. The United States is simply incapable of dealing rationally with Castro.
When Fidel got to New York, he had a warmer welcome.
Rodeado por la multitud, apretujado por el entusiasmo de miles y miles de personas, entra en la estación Pennsylvania de Nueva York un joven abogado, alto y barbudo, que sabe hablar un idioma sencillo y valiente, y que viste el uniforme de comandante del ejército rebelde cubano.
In 1960, he traveled to the United States for a second time to address the General Assembly of the United Nations. When the manager of the Shelburne Hotel, worried about adverse publicity, asked him to leave, Fidel threatened to camp out on the grounds of the UN. At the Hotel Teresa, world leaders visited him. Nasser from Egypt and Nehru from India. Black activist Malcolm X also called on him, as did the Soviet leader, Nikita Khrushchev. On his return to Cuba, the first priority of Fidel's revolution was the redistribution of land through the Agrarian Reform Act. Under Batista, foreigners had owned more than 70% of the arable land. Most of the sugar industry was in U.S. hands. At first, quite modest land expropriations were proposed. They even included land owned by Fidel's family. Besides land redistribution, the reform included health care, education, housing, and road building in rural zones.
Yeah, about a year after the agrarian reform was introduced and some American properties, rural properties, the King Ranch and so forth, were nationalized, the Cuban government ordered the foreign refineries, two of which were American, to refine Soviet crude oil. I think their first inclination was to do it, but they were encouraged by the U.S. Treasury Department not to. So they refused. They would not refine the Soviet crude. The Cuban government then nationalized those refineries, the oil companies in Cuba. The United States retaliated for that by cutting off the Cuban sugar quota, and Cuba then retaliated for that by nationalizing all U.S. properties in Cuba. And in October of 1960, the United States imposed the embargo against Cuba. So it was sort of one step led to another.
Central to understanding the Cuban Revolution is the relationship historically between Cuba and the United States. This was more than anything a nationalistic movement that Fidel was able to capitalize on, where the people in Cuba from the founding of the country had struggled for a sense of their own sovereignty and independence.
In addition to land reform, Fidel placed education at the heart of the revolution. thousands of young people set out for the most isolated parts of the island to teach the farmers to read and write. Was declared the year of education. In the midst of false rumors that the revolution would take children away from their parents, the U.S. State Department and the Catholic Church organized what was later called Operation Peter Pan, which airlifted 14,000 unaccompanied Cuban children to the United States. At the same time, other Cubans left for the United States and joined the exile community.
The CIA began to plan the assassination of Fidel and Raul and Che, whatever leadership they could get, but especially Fidel, so as to demoralize the Cuban people and make the Bay of Pigs invasion more likely to be successful.
In 1961, John Kennedy inherited the invasion plans from Eisenhower. He allowed it to go ahead, but vetoed the use of U.S. combat forces. As preliminary acts leading to the invasion, saboteurs burned thousands of acres of sugarcane, and the La Cubre, a Belgian freighter carrying arms, was blown up at a Havana dock. A second bomb was timed to explode, and volunteers reached the burning ship to help the victims. Over 100 people were killed, and hundreds more wounded. Moreover, exiled Cuban pilots flying American planes painted with Cuban insignia bombed two airports, killing a number of civilians. The Bay of Pigs invasion, which was launched from Nicaragua, ended in disaster. The forces directed by the United States met with intense, unexpected Cuban resistance, and the battle ended in 72 hours. The captured Cuban exiles were later exchanged for baby food and medicine. In the mountainous regions, opposition groups financed by the CIA formed pockets of resistance against the revolution, but they were eventually overcome. The overt war against the country became a covert war against the man.
It was a long-running policy of the United States government, not just of the CIA, because they carry out the orders. They don't determine who's going to get assassinated. But they carry out the orders, and they had the orders from the higher-ups in the National Security Council and the Eisenhower and Kennedy and Johnson administrations.
And there's the fact that they haven't been able to kill him. I mean, that must really be upsetting, that they have not been able to kill this man who has persisted in being exactly who he is for all of these years against the mightiest power on the earth. It's quite phenomenal.
Faced with this massive hostility from the U.S., the giant, the colossus to the north, who is he going to turn to protect his revolution? Sweden? India? There was only one other power on the globe that could provide any promise that that revolution perhaps could survive and last, and that was the Soviet Union.
Cuba threw in its lot with the Soviet Union. 1 year later, Khrushchev came up with a plan to install Soviet missiles on Cuban soil.
Castro reluctantly agreed to accept the missiles, but then he said, at least if you're going to deliver the missiles, make it a public act. But Khrushchev thought he could do it clandestinely and it would spring it on the Americans.
U.S. spy planes discovered the missiles, which brought the Soviet Union and the United States to the brink of nuclear war. The crisis ended when the president's brother, Robert Kennedy, negotiated a secret deal with Khrushchev. The Soviet Union would remove the missiles if the United States withdrew its missiles from Turkey and later promised not to invade Cuba.
When Khrushchev then took the missiles out without the courtesy of notifying Castro or consulting with him, Castro was furious.
Well, he was caught in somewhat of a difficult dilemma. Pragmatically, he needed the support of the Soviet Union because economically they were completely dependent. So he then constructed a relationship with the Soviet Union where he was constantly looking for ways to assert independence from the Soviets, particularly in the foreign policy arena.
There were earth-shaking changes about to happen. And Fidel's ability to give expression to those historical changes allowed him to emerge as the sort of representative of the possibility of third world countries, you know, moving away from the capitalist orbit toward a different kind of future.
The Cuban Revolution, with Fidel and Che at its head, became an inspiration to others seeking political change in Latin America.
Ahora sí, la historia tendrá que contar con los pobres de América, con los explotados y vilipendiados de América Latina, que han decidido empezar a escribir ellos mismos para siempre su historia.
After a dramatic insurgent experience in the Congo, Che led a guerrilla group in the Bolivian jungle. On October 8, 1967, they were ambushed. Che, who was wounded in the fighting, was taken prisoner and murdered the next day. Members of the Bolivian army threw his body and those of his comrades into a secret grave. Fidel continued to support struggles all over the world. In Vietnam, where Ho Chi Minh led a popular liberation movement, Cuba sent sugar, rice, and blood donations, and trained doctors, engineers, teachers, and agricultural workers. In 1970, Allende's Chilean Revolution offered another model of change, the peaceful road to socialism. Fidel made a supportive tour of the country. For the United States, the Chilean road to socialism was no more acceptable than the Cuban one. In 1973, the CIA backed a coup by General Pinochet, which led to President Allende's violent death. Cuba backed the Sandinistas in Nicaragua, who were victorious in 1979. The assassination of his friend Maurice Bishop in Grenada was a great blow to Fidel. Internal divisions in Grenada opened the way for the United States to invade. Cuban construction workers were caught in the middle, and some were killed and wounded.
If I was writing history, I would write about the way in which Fidel, as the leader of one of the smallest countries in the world, helped to shape the destinies of millions of people across the globe.
It's not just Castro the man. He carries with him a meaning, a signification, which is of tremendous importance to people like ourselves who are the marginalized of the world. And Africa, as a mother country to so many Cubans, needed to be addressed as part and parcel of the worldwide thing of African liberation.
Right from the beginning, Cuba's revolutionary ideals not only spread throughout Latin America, but also forged strong ties with national liberation leaders such as Sekou Touré, Amilcar Cabral, Julius Nyerere, Samora Machel, and Agostinho Neto. In 1975, as Angola moved towards independence from Portugal, the CIA, along with the apartheid government of South Africa, tried to bring down the new Angolan government. At the request of the Angolan president, Fidel sent 36,000 troops to keep the South African forces from attacking Luanda, the capital. For many Cubans, whose ancestors were African slaves, the fight in Angola was a way to repair a debt to history. In 14 years of war, over 300,000 Cubans, doctors, teachers, and engineers, as well as soldiers, played an important role in Angola. More than 2,000 lost their lives. In 1988, Fidel sent in more Cuban troops for the decisive battle at Cuito Cuanavale and directed operations from Cuba. The defeat of the South African army drove a large nail into the coffin of apartheid and helped advance the struggle of the South African people.
Had it not been for the Cuban presence in Africa, and in particular in Angola, the history of Africa would have never been what it is now. One of the greatest friends that Cuba has is Nelson Mandela, and his appreciation for what the Cuban people did, and Fidel Castro. But I think if you don't understand that history, then you'll never really understand the enormous success and the importance of the Cuban Revolution.
Well, my president.
My brother.
President and my brother.
How are you?
My brother.
Please. Very nice to see you.
Estoy tan contento de verlo.
Please sit down.
Tan contento. Por favor, tenga bien sentarse.
Siéntese. Now, one thing before we say anything.
Una cosa antes de hablar, nada.
Before we say anything.
Antes de hablar absolutamente de cualquier tema.
You must tell me when you are coming to South Africa.
Me tiene que decir cuándo viene para Sudáfrica.
Soon afterwards, Fidel did go to South Africa and on his way stop off in Namibia, where he was greeted by Sam Nujoma, the nation's leader.
Welcome to the Republic of Namibia.
Bienvenido a la República de Namibia.
The country which you helped to liberate, to be liberated.
In South Africa, Mandela was waiting. Fidel was invited to address the South African Parliament.
Conviértase Sudáfrica en modelo de un mundo futuro más justo y más humano.
Let South Africa be a model of a more just and more humane future.
Fidel is linked to the post-colonial era as the figure who more than any, I think, symbolizes independence and sovereignty of small nations, shaking off the yoke of the imperial powers, and the fact that he has been there for as long as he has and has been able to magnify his role to really a global force from this tiny island base.
In the 70s and 80s, Cuba's battleground on the home front was the economy. Tremendous efforts were made to industrialize the country and create shared wealth in spite of the continuing U.S. blockade. Cuba was dependent on a single crop, sugar. The Soviet Union promised to buy as much as could be produced. Fidel tried to spur the country on through personal example in the attempt to reach new harvest levels. The paradox of Cuba's independence, depending on support from the Soviet Union, involved Fidel in a balancing act that lasted 30 years. Help from the Soviet Union made it possible for Cuba to maintain its advances in universal education and health care, and to promote sports and scientific development, as well as greater industrial diversification.
The government of Fidel Castro has shown a world that is teeming with billions of impoverished people that it is possible for a very poor country emerging from sickness and ignorance and corruption and poverty of a Batista regime, to within a few short years educate all of its children, to create a system of education that is comprehensive, that reaches the entire society, that abolishes illiteracy, that is capable of export to other countries to help them learn to read and write and grow and know.
By the mid-1980s, Fidel began to perceive problems in the economy and industry. Supplies of goods became sporadic, and there was growing corruption. The Cuban dream of an egalitarian society was in danger. Fidel's response to the crisis was to personally oversee every aspect of Cuban society. He criticized, cajoled, and reorganized in his own unique style. Even during the most difficult crises, Fidel has always emphasized the development of sports. Cuba now ranks among the top 10 countries in Olympic medals.
Under Fidel Castro, Cubans became famous as artists, as filmmakers, as writers, as baseball players, as boxers, as scientists, and as soldiers. So he took a country and he made them somebody, and there was a cost. And that's the part I think that the American press and certainly his critics emphasize.
And those are audio excerpts from the film Fidel by Estela Bravo. The U.S.-born filmmaker Estela Bravo has lived in Cuba since 1963 and has made 30 documentaries. This is a 91-minute documentary film entitled Fidel.